password. So
I do actually use a different password for most websites. I have a mental tool that I use that allows me to use a different password for, like, a lot of people I read use the same password for like all their websites, which I think is
it's
super
Warden.
insecure. But it's not hard to come up with just a simple like mental
Yeah,
rule,
I
you
do
know. So
something similar. Yeah,
there's
use
lots
my
of
own kind of.
there's lots of things you can do, yeah. So
Bitwarden I find absolutely fantastic. So it's not written down. I just have to remember the master password. And if I want to, I can host it locally.
yeah. So like one idea, for example, that I use amongst a set of my passwords is you find like a pattern on the keyboard, like a square or circle or star or triangle. And then you basically, for example, CT and N form a triangle on your keyboard, right? RTBV form a square, So there's, simple things like that you can do
I had a
that
friend
are
in college. He was dyslexic.
pretty
He was quite
random.
badly dyslexic, and that's how he remembered telephone numbers. That's
Oh, yeah.
exactly how he remembered telephone numbers. I always thought that was cool.
Let me get the recording started here. Oh. I already started recording. So welcome everybody to the Configuration Persistence and Service for December 11th. We're just getting started here. I had contacted Tony and Twain. I've been given some new assignments and still in the ONAP, ORAN community. But that means I need to ramp down here. I'll still be around, but I'm gonna hand over the meeting running to Twain when he gets all that going. So with that, I think we're going to start off with the project software status. And Neve has sent me an email about a topic to talk about the architecture and issues and decisions topic. So I'm going to stop sharing. You guys want to?
Ben, there is one request. Is it possible that we have like maybe a short presentation from Krishna
Oh,
on
sure.
the API mapper service that we were talking about, right, Ben? Maybe after you go over the project status, we could probably spend some 10, 15 minutes to quickly
Sure,
go over it.
yeah. Okay. Is Neve's on the call?
Thank you. I'm gonna start it or okay.
Yeah, we'll start with the project status. Sorry, I have some problems here with organizing my screen. I don't seem to be able to get out of full screen mode for some reason. I don't know what's going on. I really don't know what I'm doing here. Sorry. I'm still in full screen mode and I can't get out of it. Oh, no, escapes works. Okay, that's good to know. Can I have sharing rights? Did you make me co-host, Ben? Hello, Ben. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you have co-host rights.
Okay, sorry. See, I often have broadband issues, so I thought nobody could hear me. Okay. Let me know if you can see my screen.
It's up.
Okay, I am getting. We'll just do a quick. Just tidy this up. Sorry, I should have had that ready beforehand. So, just a quick update over the week, what we've been working on and what's in progress. So Ruslan is still quite busy with associating the anchor with a, what we now call a schema set. We had to change our wording slightly because of the way actually the audio young parser works. So before it was like a module set, but now it's more like a set of files and we call it a schema set. So that's ongoing. Aditya is, she already merged the code for retrieving all the anchors in a given data space. She still needs to write some testware and do a demo for that. That will happen next week. Ruslan, yeah, that's a subtask of the first thing, the introducing the module sets, so what now schema sets, so that's gone. I have been not really making much progress with, and should we name this spike now? We had a meeting where we clarified the model and how we're going to go forward now using, focusing on the end-to-end network slicing use case. Yes, as I said, the model is clear now, and I've been sent a data set as well, but I didn't get a chance to look at it in more detail, unfortunately, not yet. Claudio has started working on listing all the module references. So that's for the end user. You can ask, you have a data space and a set, and then you can ask, okay, which are actually all the modules that are in this. So as part of that, we found some issues again, but we're working through them at the moment.
So when you get a module,
quite busy with applying the.
When you get a module reference back, is that the namespace and revision, or what does that actually? What does a module reference
look?
It's an emphasis and revision. Okay, perfect. Thanks.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So you get a list of those. Neve has been busy with going to basically implementing the agreed API and SPI. I think that has been merged now. Now there's some cleaning up still to be done. The spin-off on that, we kind of had some work to do around the exceptions and some, but I was a bit involved in that, just getting the exceptions finalized and how we handle exceptions and how we split them up. So that's all been agreed and pretty much implemented at this stage. And then finally Neve, and that's the discussion that's coming up. Neve started looking at the logging. So we'll get back to that in a couple of minutes. I should have started with the books, but I don't think there's anything reported or ongoing. I know there was a book and I think it's closed. Can't even quite remember what it was. So no open books at the moment, that's the main thing. So that's good. Just having a quick look at this, but I don't think this covers more or less what I've discussed as part of the status already as well. So Aditya's work regarding the anchors has been merged. We had some issues between Nordics and ONAP, the repo. There was some damage there. Something went wrong. We had to fix that yesterday. So the exception handling, I talked about that. That has been merged earlier this week as well. The improvements that Ruslan brought in regarding testing using a Dockerized container, that has been merged this week as well. And this is all the SPI work. Claudio did some improvements as well regarding this solution. So again, some kind of standardization, how we manage, I think, the Nexus repositories that has been merged. This is more about exception handling and updates of the schema set. So yeah, that's pretty much an overview of what has been happening this week and what's currently ongoing. So if there's no questions on that, I'll hand it over to Neve to discuss the thing about logging. Is that okay? Then I'll stop sharing.
Thank you. Neve, did you want to...
Yeah, I'll share my screen. So yeah, we just we already have some configuration for the logging inner project, but there's some issues and decisions that have came up. So we just want to go through them. The first thing I'd like to discuss is a comment that Bruno made, and he was suggesting we should only have the logs to print them to system out and not save them to files. So maybe Bruno, could you just explain that a bit more to us first?
Yeah, sure. It's based on the experience we had with operation. When the logs are in the log file in the container, also as soon as the container is restarting, the logs also are not available for the previous container. These logs are taking more space on the Kubernetes node. So if ever we want to protect also the node and keep the log, then we have to move them to PVC and then start managing the PVC. And so That's why the preferred way we are using loading is really to move the logs to STD out, and we are using FileBit or any like ELK stack to send the log where it's useful for operation. So that's why the idea really that to be able for sure to have all the log configured at deployment time, and really on our side we would like to disable logging in files and sending STD out, and for also something that we like also to achieve is to be able to have in STD out structured logs. Even these logs then can be structured then by metrics, error, or whatever information that could be attached to this log, and then they could be easily indexed. They could be we can run queries on this information after that. And then also we are using the default logging mechanism from Kubernetes that is using STD out. So that's why we have a preference for STD out over files for managing the logs. And anyway, if ever we have to provide both, it should be fully configurable to be able to achieve also the STD out logging, I think. In fact, that's our feedback from our operation then, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so do you think, would it be okay to configure both STD out and SafetyFall?
Sorry, excuse me? Mm-hmm.
Would STD system out print be okay, but to also configure it to print to a file?
You mean, If we want to store in a file, we could provide it, but I think also, we should be able to disable it and configure it in a different way also. I think that's really a requirement because we are working a lot with the log currently in production. We are working a lot with the logs in files, and it's close to index to our operation. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bruno, do you know if this, is there any guidance on this from an ONAP Central point of view? Is there any consensus, any advice how this should be done? Because what I'm hearing is, the way I understand is you want to almost put a responsibility at a higher level, at the deployment level. But I suppose we need some consensus across all ONAP applications to be able to do that properly.
I've seen the documentation that also Niamh or Claudio put in the story, and also maybe we should also come back to the logging project, or because when I was in the latest conference on latest DDF, I think that also that was the idea to move to STD out, but I haven't seen any documentation since it was during the discussion in the DDF. But so I don't know what is the status for this one. Yeah.
Claudio had a comment that so whether we use Kubernetes or whichever, we should not enforce anything specific.
By checking the current status, and if ever for an ONAP perspective, I think if these specific files are still needed, we could still have this implemented, but the idea will be really through the end chart to provide the way to configure the log differently. And so that's also something that also has been done in policy framework where you are able to provide the log configuration through the end chart at deployment. This way it can be any operator can have a different setup. So I think that that will be the good thing I could to achieve. Yeah. I mean, there is default configuration in the application, but anyway, the at deployment through the Helm chart, this configuration can be changed. Yeah.
Okay. So if I can summarize to see if I understand it correctly, mm-hmm. the proposal is to configure in Java in our project in such a way that our logging all goes to standard out, and then at a later stage as part of the deployment, we can configure what happens with that standard output. Is that correct way of looking at it?
The idea would be the log configuration file. Yeah, this file should be fully configurable at deployment. So that's really the idea, to provide a default at the configuration and to be able to change it when we deploy. And maybe one something also we can do is to check. I don't know which team is looking at the logging specification from ONAP, and maybe just be in sync with them. What if there is any new guidance that, or they are still the same with the log file? Just to be in sync with this requirement. Okay. Is it the architecture that project that or the, at the architecture level or at the login project? Not sure. Maybe we could check that or something. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just to help me mm-hmm. understand, this is yeah. not about using a log framework or not using a log framework. This is about ensuring that there is a lowest common. It is possible to have a lowest common denominator, which facilitates later integration activities. So, if in Java you were continuing to use SLF4J with an appender that or an outputter that was piping to standard out, then that's what you're talking about. It's getting it on standard out. It's not about how you get it.
Yeah, for sure. It's not. We're not talking about how to which framework, which tool to use. No matter which one is it, it's just more to what is the requirement, and yeah, just to where we are sending the logs and how to manage them. We're not talking about the tool here. Any after that, it's an implementation detail.
Yeah, perfect. That's clear then.
There is also a logging project in ONAP. Is that relevant here?
Yeah, we've been looking into that as well. There's various different ways you can, different projects have done this. So yeah. Yeah, we should look into that some more, I think.
But I think what Ben means is a specific project that is looking into gathering the logs and making the logs accessible from all applications. Ben, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I think there's a platform component, actually, that's a logging component. I haven't really worked with it, but I know it exists. So.
Oh, I think I read about this logging enhancement project or something. Yeah, I need to look into that.
Yeah, as far as I know, neither we are not using it, or I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about this one. Yeah.
But isn't that meaning that you need some schema to have the same format or same rules or whatever when you log, or is that already in place? Maybe.
I'm not sure. Right now, we're just logging to a file. That's all we have so far.
But you are using a framework to do so, Niamh. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it should be possible to change that relatively easily through configuration. And I think what Bruno's looking for is the ability to expose that configuration in the Helm chart.
Okay.
And that makes sense to me. That if there isn't a uniform way to do this in ONAP, if the teams are doing different things, and the operators would like to do different things, just as we are looking to have an SBI to allow us to provide different implementations of the database, I think it is probably not a bad thing to be able to provide different implementations of how to collect logs. And a lowest common denominator for these things is the standard out and standard error to tap into those streams from a collection perspective. That is a lowest common denominator. So I don't necessarily see it as a bad thing at all. It's not to say that it's if there are collectors that are looking for files and they're able to take them from volume or however, whatever interface that central logging service looks for, if it prefers to deal with files, then that's also something that could be looked at later. But I think as a configurable lowest common denominator, I certainly wouldn't have any objection to it from my part.
The way we are currently trying to configure the application, the ONAP application, is just to be able to send all the for all components to send the log to STD out. Then the logs are available by using the Kubernetes log tools because that's the one that Kubernetes is using. And then on top of that, I think there is a. We are putting a file bit just to collect an ALK stack just to grab all the logs and index them and publish them in a Kibana dashboard and I think also in the story also I put a link on the Kubernetes logging architecture in a CPS 10. In CPS 10, there's a link. It's there. The Kubernetes administration logging. That's the way. That's what we are trying to achieve. Yeah.
Okay, so for now, what do we decide that we for now just write a standard out and we'll explore a bit further what are the options or the guidelines from the central ONAP logging project? Maybe that gives us clarification on what we should be doing. Is that enough for now?
Maybe we can probably just it out and just go back and think with the logging project and architecture project if there is any other specific requirement.
I think there's two things here because I mean I know personally as someone who used to write code that having a log file was much better than standard out, so that would be my default. When I'm actually working and debugging and then I'm the primary user of the log statements, then having them in a file and being able to grep and search and look back at them over maybe hundreds and hundreds of log statements, that is the easiest for me because I'm testing typically in isolation. So that would be a default. And then the second aspect of this is that it be configurable, so that we can actually configure it to go to standard out and then let something else look after how it's moved around and filed and stored and represented. And if that's the Elasticsearch and Kibana stack, then that's that's totally fine. I think you need to support both. And from my mind, the default would be, yes, I'm going to stick this into a log file because that's how most designers work. They don't normally have an ELK stack running side by side. And then it's almost impossible to find. You're scrolling up in terminal screens and hopefully you've got a big enough buffer. So.
You mean when developing to investigate when you're for the development, better to have a log file than for starting. And for sure the aspect the log file start causing trouble or more work for operation when it's in operation and when
because then you have to manage life cycle of there's a whole bunch of pain that comes with and people often forget them. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. yeah. yeah And even lost if the file is in the container in the pod, it's even lost as soon as the also
correct
as soon as the pod restarts if you're not moved them to PVC or something like that. And then you have to manage your PVC and so
yes, all that complexity comes. Yeah.
With log file. So that's why I think it would make sense to me also to as soon as at that deployment time we are able to configure it in a different way and then be able to go through the outcome. For production running or
For me, Bruno, I think the question really is which is the default. So do we set the default to be standard out and then have the designer set an environment variable, or do we expose that environment variable in the Helm chart to make it configurable there? So I guess that to me is when we're getting to the meat of the question here, because I see both as being completely valid. So what is the default position and where, how do you switch it and where do you need to expose that switch?
Yeah, for the default also, I think it makes sense also to have the default as a log as soon as the requirement is more to be able to change it later. Default could be the file. I don't see any issue with that. That's fine.
I'm actually on. I think it might be safer to have the default the other way around. Mm-hmm. So if we make the default standard, the default standard out, because that means nothing fills up or anything like that, and it's very easy as a developer to redirect it when you're troubleshooting or something like that. But that's, I think, that's the more difficult question. How can we expose it so that we can easily redirect it? But I'd like to make, I would suggest to make this default to standard out only, but then have an easy mechanism to Helm chart or some environment variable or so anything else to redirect it as you're doing a troubleshooting session. And as something like Kubernetes or whatever the deployment is, can take over the redirection of the standard out.
Yeah, for me, I would just use an environment variable that would change the appender.
Variable also some variable could be. There is a different way to do it. So for some project, we could have variable even in the configuration, and then you can adjust the variable through the environment variable when you are deploying. Or some projects also provide, you are able to provide the complete log stack, log configuration file through the M chart in the config map. And then when the application is deployed, all the configuration is available in the chart.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting into real complex stuff here because it is really nice to be able to change the log levels on running software. And if you have put it into the config map, then you're essentially causing a lifecycle method on the container, which means
Tuan, I think we can configure the logback.xml. I think we can get the full control or the log files what we want to customize using the logback.xml.
Which is located, you're saying, I think we have that already, but the question is that the right mechanism? What's the default?
The way to configure it, I say it could be either a variable, environment variable in the config file, or it could be just also being able to provide the config file in the charts. I don't have any strong opinion for either. I think
because I've seen it in SO code. I'm in SO code now. I'm checking how they are doing these things. So they have the logback.xml where they specify all this log info, log debug, like warn, all this
and everything
log levels.
And there are these are provided also in the chart, right? For ESO.
I didn't check that in the chart, but okay. I see that they have a module in their Spring Boot application. They have a module called CXF. But let me just check it. Where is it again?
But let's say for policy framework, for example, yeah, policy framework is providing all the log back configuration to the M charts also. And there is a default one in the application, and it can be overridden with the chart.
I think we're going a little bit off topic here. The original question was, do we want to standard out or to files? We've discussed that. I think we might have agreed on a preferred default. We also were going to look at the central logging framework and any guidance or any rules that gives us that we might have to follow. And then I think we have broad agreement as well that we need some way of modifying it, either to the Helm chart or some other way that or anything that could be exposed and could be manipulated to the Helm chart. So do we have enough information here? That's what I'm asking for Niamh to go forward to is this question answered? And do we know what the next steps is that we need to do?
I think we can move on to the next question.
Yep. For the default, which one? I don't have any strong feeling. For the default, which one are we going with?
Standard out.
So I thought that was more or less a decision standard out by default, but an easy configurable way to change it to files for a developer that just wants to test something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, does it make sense to you, Tony? I was under the impression that you were preferring the file as the default, or are we okay?
No, I mean, when I thought about it, it made sense that the default would be to facilitate integration so that you didn't, if something was forgotten, you didn't run out of space in your container and kill something.
Okay.
Silly mistakes like that can be avoided. And as Tuan says, it's easy for a designer to set a flag, set an environment variable. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's really an implementation decision as to exactly how that would be exposed in the Helm chart, if it is to be exposed in the Helm chart. And that will come out of some of the investigation on how logging is handled centrally in ONAP.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In my understanding, it should be exposed. Like I can see it in SOS, ONAP SO, it is exposed.
Actually, Kamel, maybe if you can share some of the repo, what you're looking at, maybe you can share that with us so Niamh can have a closer look at that, what you're looking at. Is that okay?
As vintage, you can that repo and can you hear me?
You're breaking up for me. I'm not sure.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you again now.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I was saying you can clone SO repo. You can see how they are doing logging, as well as Ben mentioned, you can go to the logging component in ONAP. You can get some more details there. But I see in SDNC, what I have seen in SDNC and APSI, these logging things, you can configure them, are configurable, means that they are exposed in the Helm charts. So you can open a debug mode. If debug mode is off, you can open it on, open some other log info as well.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Is that enough information for you, Niamh, to look into? Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I think we can move on to the next question. So currently we just have one log file, but in ONAP they use the event and error logging framework, which suggests having four different log files. So one for bug, audit, metric, an error. So what are your opinions on this?
Is that a central thing or is that per container?
It's per container, I guess.
From what I see, it's by container.
Okay.
And so Yaniv, is this coming from that central logger that we just talked about and that Ben sent us a link to? Where did you get this information from?
I mean the application are doing.
So Niamh, maybe you go first.
Sure. So I just opened the link that Ben sent. This is the logging enhancement project.
You're not sharing that.
Oh. Can you guys see it now?
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's that,
So it just mentions having four different types of logging.
What's an ELF logging?
That is a framework that they use in ONAP. It stands for Event and Error Logging Framework.
Yeah, it is used by SDNC, APSI, and other components.
If that's the case, is it something that we can copy lock, stock, and two smoke and barrels from those components? You know, you talked about how it's configured, and you said that SDNC had a way to configure this to turn on and off debug. Is that something, and I guess really, Tuan, this is down to you as PTL, is that something we can beg, borrow, and steal rather than to reinvent?
Yeah, and it seems to me, if I read the top line there, this is a recommendation. So now I had some concern about splitting files, but now I see the four topics. I would assume that debug includes error, because one thing I hate I've been troubleshooting a lot, and one thing I hate is that if I'm dealing with two files and I have to merge them or put them together, we'll get some information of one file and other information of the other. But it looks like audit, okay, that's very separate, that's fine. So Niamh, would you mind just staying at the top?
I have the same
metrics. Okay, that's clear. Yeah.
Yeah, I have the same concern as you, Tony, because I've seen this week in AI, for example, some logging configuration I specified to log a specific log level, even error, but also remove the level below. So that's something a bit weird, I think,
that's really bad. No, for me, the assumption would be that that the fourth level debug includes the underlying. Now, audit I see is something a completely different type of data. Metric is different type of data as well. Could be interesting if you're troubleshooting something. But error and debug to me are different levels of the same thing. And one should, let's put it this way, debug should not exclude the error level, because if you turn on debugging and you get that in one file, you don't want to turn to another file to see your error logging. That would be the worst thing ever.
Yeah. I mean, in this page, you have all the appenders you can add in your logbank.xml.
But to me, this looks like this is the recommendation. This is what we should try to follow. And I, like I said, I assume that ladder, and maybe we have some freedom on what level that's it, and make sure that the debug level is complete and includes the error level logging. Then I'll be happy enough to split it these four ways.
Yeah. I think this is the best practices, I guess. I mean, you can find out the best practices doing this. I'm sure the other components, they are following this.
Okay, so we're happy enough to split it.
Yeah, but I will just take that little note that the error log, sorry, that the debug
an error.
If that makes sense.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
I would just take a note of the fact that we need to make sure that the debug logging does not exclude the error logging. So basically, the way I look at it, the debug log will be a bigger file that contains more data, and that's probably not turned on by default. So by default, you get your error logging, but when you turn on your debug logging, you get a different file that contains more information, but it doesn't exclude the other information that was already in the error log. That's what I would assume. And I hope we can configure it that way.
Okay.
And same thing as before, I would say still also we would be interested in having a way to disable it, to disable this if not interesting or not needed.
Yeah. Yeah. I presume at the moment we're not logging.
Yeah. At deployment, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Tuan, are you going to do like the others? I mean, if you see SO, you see SDNC or other components. I mean, when you go to the log, you have audit log, you have debug log, you have error log, and you have metrics log. Are you going to follow the same others are doing?
Yeah, no, that's what we're discussing here. And I suggest that we should follow this.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I have one concern, and that is that the debug log doesn't exclude the error log. That's the only thing I'd like to be clear on.
I have a secondary concern. I suspect that these log, I mean, it's a fantastic page. It's got a wealth of information right down to markers and location and information about your last question, the disk space. So it's got a whole bunch of guidance around that. But I suspect that this was written for virtual machines, not for containers. So it might be worth clarifying. It might be worth clarifying because I think this might be up for a little bit of debate when more and more of ONAP moves to cloud native and containerization.
And yeah,
I often see with container management is there's usually a second layer of management on top of the, so something is maintaining the
volumes. Like
the container itself, whatever's running that also has logs too.
Let me provide in the, let me put the link for Kubernetes in the blogging in the chat. Because for container, the way that we are disabling it, this log, it's really because for a container perspective, it's not really efficient to have the log in the container.
I hear you, Bruno. I mean, I'm looking at the retention and it's saying, you know, total files capped at 10 gigs, retention was 30 days. There's no way that your container, there's no way in a cloud native environment that you're going to expect your container to be alive for 30 days. That's just not cloud native.
Yeah.
So I suspect that, you know, this is.
And even the 10 gigabyte, the more service you're deploying, the more also.
Physical volumes.
You need in your node or having TV or, yeah.
Yeah, it becomes unrealistic. So I think that this may be VM directives or instructions, best practice for VMs, because it reads like best practice for VMs, and it might be worth clarifying that with the authors of this area, because it looks like Kubernetes and Cloud Native Compute Foundation, I think, would also have probably better guidelines around how to log in. CNCF way, you know, in containers.
In container for Kubernetes, yeah, you by default, I think, Kubernetes is taking care. It's taking care of the volume, or you can have it specify the way the retention. But anyway, yeah, you have the Kubernetes logs tools to manage your log, and you send them to every other stack you want from the standard out. So that's the cognitive way to manage the log.
Yeah. So it only really gets tricky when you have something like audit that may have sensitive information in it. Then you may need a separate file handler. We have standard out, we have standard error, and you can actually create more file handlers in most programming languages if you needed to have that level of separation. But again, that kind of thing would need to be coordinated across ONAP. And it looks like these are just...
This makes me wonder, is there an active team looking, is this project active? Is there a team looking after this? Do they have meetings maybe that we should, that we can attend?
Yeah, these are good questions.
Yeah, we need. And because for a cloud native way, the way to fulfill the requirement to be able to get metrics or audit, the way I see it is to go with structured log, in which you have logs in instead of just a string as you used to have, you have the log in a JSON payload format, and you can qualify or have specific property to your logs, and some of them could be audit, some of them could be metric, but by having these structured logs, you will be able to then still index on this data and make queries on this data. So that's the way I would see to fulfill these requirements from a cloud native perspective, but I don't know if there's any reflection on that ONAP for that.
Okay, because we could discuss this for another hour, I think. There's a lot to discuss when it gets to logging. It's not an easy subject, as I'm very, very well aware. So, Niamh, I think you need to, we asked a lot of questions. I think we need to do a bit more research, find out. And Tony brought up a very good point there. This seems outdated. So is there any work ongoing on this that can help us apply this in our cloud environment, because it doesn't seem a good fit at the moment of what the recommendations are here.
Yeah, and as Bruno says, if we do need to distinguish between debug, audit, metric, and error, then the least impact would be to mark each log statement.
Yeah. So there are solutions, we know that. So we need to see, is anybody already working on these solutions? Is there any thoughts on this? I think we need to explore that a bit further before we as a team can make decisions.
Okay.
So just a point on the log name. You list the kind of directory there. There probably should be maybe some rules about the actual log name itself. Maybe like typically I would expect like a date or timestamp or something.
A lot of that was in the page that you referenced, Ben. It really is a comprehensive resource for what to do about logging. It's very, very good. But I just don't know that it applies completely in the cloud native development. It brings an awful lot of complexity that probably is not what you want to add, because then you're turning your container back into a virtual machine again.
Yeah, but one, this is what is. I mean, the components are following. They are following this ELF, which is the event and error logging framework. I can see it SO is. A container. All the containers they have this.
You broke up again, Kamel. I don't know if you're still talking, but I think that's part of the follow-on for Niamh on this one. That we need to understand what is the status of this, because it doesn't strike me as being particularly good for cloud native. That's all I'm saying. It really doesn't read. It reads like it was done before cloud native was introduced into ONAP.
Okay, I think we conclude there that we need to continue that investigation. What is being done on our applications? Is it fit for purpose for a cloud native application? And if not, what we do, what do we change? What do we take from these guidelines and what do we need to change? I don't think there's any point in going into the questions 3 and 4 then even until you've done that research.
Sure.
And also, Niamh, I put another link for about structured logs, and maybe if you're doing some follow-up or see if there's any initiative at your own app, just to see if there's anything about this coming on or to be more cloud native.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm.
So to summarize in 2 sentences, for now we'll configure it that our logging just goes to standard out, maybe with a mechanism to easily redirect that, and you continue your investigation how we can follow the ONAP guidelines and bring up that issue that those standards don't seem to be fit for a cloud environment, especially the size of the, what do you call it, the retention.
I will, for my side, one, I will send you the example from SO, the logback.xml file. Just to,
okay, that's great.
Yeah. You look at it and see if we can follow that or we can go with other. We can start with, as you said.
Do you mean STD out and STD error both or only STD out?
I presume only STD out.
I think, yeah, only STD out.
You could categorize your.
Was it Swami or Krishna that was presenting next day?
Krishna. Krishna wanted to present something at Swami's request.
Krishna, can you please start?
Yeah, Ben. Yeah, Swami. Let me just share my screen.
Yeah, sure.
Can you guys see my screen, like the slides at least?
Yep.
So this is related to that mapper service that we have been discussing over the past few weeks. Like, I just created a draft architecture for that. Maybe we can go through it. Like, it's just a couple of slides and I have some open points at the end that we could discuss. Yeah. Let me just start. Like, from the architecture wise, this could sit on top of the existing CPS REST service. So this will be specifically the XPath query. So anything that we need to access the data in the Young model, so it could sit on top of it. So the mapper service will be exposing 2 sets of APIs, one for the templates, management of the templates, and another one is for the executing the templates. So I just added a database here. Like, there are no specifications for this database. Like, we could reuse the existing database that the CPS is using. Like, we just need a relational database. That's it. So the table could look something like this. The schema could look something like this. So it will have a mapping between an ID and a template. So let's say we have an XPath query for getting the neighbor list of a cell. We could create a template like this. So this will be an XPath template, not a direct query, because we'll be giving some input to the template to create that XPath query. For example, for this get neighbor list, we'll be needing a particular cell ID. Okay, so that cell ID, we need to feed it as an input to this XPath template to create that XPath query. So that will be coming from the consumers directly. So that's why it is a template here. So this will not be a static XPath query. So this will be an XPath template, which will get the inputs from the consumer.
Quick question. Are you assuming that the neighbor list will be the same in all network function models?
No. So Yeah, exactly. So it will be different for different cells. So that's why it's going to be a template. So for example, for cell A, the neighbors are going to be different.
So no. I get that the list itself will be different, but the XPath could be different depending on the vendor.
Yes. So exactly. That we should be able to accomplish by using different templates, Tony.
Yep. But that you need to take care of quite early on to cater for the, okay, I want to get an NBR list from a type of vendor or type of network function. So you need as well, it's not just that you need the template name, so get neighbor list, I would see as being the template name or the key to the template. And then obviously it has parameters, but then there's another piece of information that's required in order to resolve the correct template. And you need to understand that and put it into your schema early, because at the moment we only have the one model. It's what Swami, I believe you've been working on.
Right, Tony. Yeah, Krishna, I think the point that Tony is mentioning, right? So depending, for example, on the vendor equipment, right? I mean, the path, the XPath itself could be different, or there could be some variants of it, which we need to cater in the model, Krishna. Maybe that's something I see two solutions, Tony. One is, like you said, there should be like a way of, disambiguating which query you want to do. There could be a second approach where you pass that also as an argument or as a parameter in the get neighbor list query, Tony.
Yes, absolutely. As long as we cater for the fact that there is this extra level that you would, I want to get the neighbor list from an Ericsson node, or I want to get the neighbor list from a Huawei node or a Nokia node.
Can you determine that based on the target node?
But that's my point. You need to specify the target node if you're putting it into the mapper service. The mapper service needs to be given that piece of information.
And it would be good if the exposed API is the same no matter which vendor you're talking to.
Exactly. Right? So, and that's where the get neighbor list, the template, the ID here is, to my mind, that API. And then the question is, okay, now, I'm looking for the get neighbor list. The template is the output and it's hidden. But in order for this mapper service to resolve that template, it needs to know the get neighbor list and the target type.
Right.
Nice.
So somehow you need to determine which template to apply based on the target.
Correct. You have to have that piece of information. That's my point.
Yep. And that's part of the mapper mediation.
That's part of this mapper service. I've been calling it a DES-like service, but yeah.
Yeah.
At a high level, I think there can be two kind of use cases where the user wants to do this query on one particular instance of one node. And then I suppose the system should know which template to apply. And the other cool use case could be that maybe this query goes across many nodes across the whole network. But again, even in that case, the system can find out, we'll have to know about the many templates that exist. And it has to find out which template to apply to which, to use a CPS terminology, anchor. So once it has an anchor, it should know which template to use for that particular anchor.
Yeah. So one query, as you say, would be to get all the neighbor lists from all the network functions in scope. In which case, the mapper service would say, okay, I've got a wildcard for my target. So therefore, it would load up all the templates and execute them in sequence against each of the anchors that were available.
Right, a wildcard or a regular expression that you'd map.
Exactly. Yeah. Now we're elaborating. Yeah, but I think
nudging it along. But the simple thing would be, first focus on a target, right? And we can do that, then the rest should be pretty easy.
Yeah,
yeah. So, I would start with that too.
So the inputs to this query, the API, I mean, the way the table is written, which is fine, because this is a relational table. You need the target. So the column that your cursor is flashing on is the target type.
Yeah, it could be the target type, exactly. Yeah, I think we could add a target type here. Or it could be a vendor or, yeah.
Yeah, so I think we already have these. Andy, you probably know better than anybody else. We're going to need this when we specify the anchor as well. Is a VNF description or a VNF type ID that we're going to take from ANAI. So that we expect that ID to be, because ANAI is the master for these things.
Can I just suggest something here? I think we're on the right track here, but what we actually need, what CPS need, is going to be a schema set identifier, a schema set name.
Yeah, but this is the mapper service.
Yeah, I understand that. So what we need is some mapping between the target types or whatever the terminology that's used currently in ANI to those schema sets. From a database uniqueness point of view, you're going to have one template for a particular schema set in CPS, which might correspond with one unique target type. I'm not sure if there's a one-to-one relationship or will many target types maybe resolve into the same schema set. Seems unlikely to me. But from a CPS point of view, that will be how you need to what you need to resolve.
I think Toin schema set would be more appropriate, I believe, as you're saying. Like maybe multiple target types could have the same schema, right? Like if you have multiple VNFs, could be using the same schemas. So
yeah.
We need multiple templates.
Now it might be one to one relationship between them, but from. If we want to relate it to CPS terminology, but I will maybe put in slash here for now for bold. So we need to map those two. We need to map from the target type to the schema set name in CPS.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Step one, and then apply the appropriate XPath.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. Now for the query, the ID for the query, are you looking at maybe Swagger operations or?
Yeah, I think we'll have CRUD operations for creating these templates, like loading these table.
But are you going to focus on a particular style of API for the template?
No, we haven't decided on it yet. I think I have some draft APIs, but I'm like, we can use the Swagger model itself. So I think this is a Swagger model that I use.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if we apply Swagger, it would really be beneficial.
Yeah.
As opposed to inventing something different.
So this is a Swagger-based model. Yeah, you can create or update any new template, or we can get a specific template, or we can get all the templates that are available in the database. And for executing the template, I think we can have a separate API for that. So for example, if it's a get neighbor list, you can just say the ID here. So this will fetch the template from the database and the corresponding target or the schema that we were discussing, right? And then it can execute the query directly into the CPS. So, and we can send the additional inputs in the as a query parameters. So
but those queries, you could also describe using Swagger too.
Ah, yes, yes. Yeah. So, and like, so there is an ambiguity here. Like, maybe we can discuss it in the open points. Like, if you have a complex query, maybe a GET request may not be able to cater to it. Maybe we have to look into it. So, and these are some of the existing ConfigDB APIs. Like these are the existing ConfigDB APIs that we are using for the use cases, SON use cases and network slicing use cases. Mm-hmm. So I took one of them, like get neighbor list here. So we can when we are doing the POC, we can use these APIs. Like for example, get neighbor list. We can use the same terminology. So to align with the older APIs. So other than that, for example, this get neighbor list is from the existing ConfigDB APIs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. These existing APIs are also used by SDNC themselves?
Yes.
Yeah.
So
that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Cool.
So by SDNC, for example, this get neighbor list, Tony, to be particular, in particular, right? So for example, it's used by SDNC, it's used by OOF, it's used by DCAE.
Yeah, but the put, it was the one I was looking at the bottom of this neighbor list. So that was actually when they got an update via the VES event, then that's typically what they would have done here.
Yeah, exactly. So the put API will be used by SDNC, and rest of them will be used by the other microservices, DCA microservice, and the optimization frameworks will be using the other APIs mainly.
Yeah. So what's missing here for me from the previous conversation was the concept of the target type. And it looks like this was just one network model. I can't see where the instance of the network function is defined here. It looks like it might have been hard coded or.
Yeah, so we had only one, let's say, model variant Tony, so far.
Yep.
But I think going forward, when we build CPS, right, I think we should allow for multiple,
No, that wasn't my point here. My point here was, even if you only had, if you had a homogeneous network where there was only one model, which would be wonderful from some perspectives, you still have instances of that. So I can see that there's a cell ID here, but I can't see anywhere in the put where I'm identifying what we're calling an anchor, an individual instance of that schema set.
Okay. I see your point. Okay.
So when I saw this originally, I was thinking, okay, now we have a good way to actually de-risk some of the load or impact on SDNC. But looking at this now, I think we still need to impact SDNC in order to cater for the fact that we will have an anchor.
Does the cell ID include a unique reference to an individual radio node? Or is the cell ID only unique within the context of a radio node? I know there's different terms being used, and so can we clarify what the cell ID exactly is in this API?
The cell global identifier, right, Krishna, if I remember correctly.
So it's global, yeah.
Okay, so there was a way then to map it. Okay.
So it's unique.
Okay, yeah, so you could, in theory, map it to an instance of a network function, yeah.
Okay. So the global ID will contain information that we can go to ANI and find out about that particular radio node to find out its target / its schema set.
There we have a problem, right? I don't think right now the cell IDs are modeled in ANI currently. So that's still...
No, but the node part. So part of the cell ID is an identifier of the radio node.
Okay, fine. Yeah,
we can split that off, go to ANI and say, okay, give me whatever information CPS needs to know about that node. So
I think that's a big assumption.
Well, we always know.
I think that's quite a big assumption.
At some stage we know we need. We talked about this, and we have a slide on this overlap. That overlap still needs to be created. That's hopefully something we can work towards, that global cell ID will have the information that we can find an instance in ANI, and somehow we can find that same instance in CPS.
Okay, yeah.
You mean, in ANI, with this cell ID, you will find the PNF ID from ANI? Because this information currently are not in ANI. You can have the PNF ID, PNF name, and all other properties related to the PNF.
Yeah, okay, I don't know exactly. So I assume part of the cell ID is a reference to the node. And my assumption is that reference is somehow stored in ANI. If it isn't, then that needs to be modified. But then we need to dot the
I's across the teams.
So we had a long discussion about cell. And basically, the ANI won't store the cell. All it knows, all ANI is going to know about is the X and there's the PNF actually associated with the cell. So yeah. Something has to within in the resulting modeling discussions, of which there were like two or three of them. I can point you to recordings. Is basically something within the management of CPS has to index the PNF to the cell. And there's also slides on the CPS overview and architecture presentations and stuff where we I created a slide to show that association. So we need to think about that as well as to allow pointing to logical objects within the like extra records or a sub record or something of a PNF.
Yeah, Ben, you're right. You know, I remember at least some months back when we were discussing what should be the, let's say, the scope of A and AI when it comes to cell, right? I think we agreed that A and AI will stop at the level of the XNF, okay, PNF in this case.
Correct.
And then any further associations has to be maintained in some form in the CPS.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. It's just a question of, one, is the information in the cell sufficient to reverse engineer the PNF ID? Sounds like that's an assumption that would need to be tested. And then if not, where do we get it from? And that is an open issue. And my preference would be that because SDNC is actually communicating with that XNF, that it should actually know its ID or something, and that should be updated in this API to specify that, okay, when I'm creating the neighbor relations list, that I also specify the ID of the network function. And then if I can get the ID of the network function, then I can definitely use ANAI to figure out what is the type of that network function.
So when I was working the plug and play use case, there's actually within ANAI, there's actually kind of a snafu where basically they this whole thing with PNF ID and PNF name was some confusion, which you might want to dig into or I can present on later. But this intrinsically, unless we have a store as part of protocol that or whatever way of working that basically the relative distinguished name is part of the cell ID, intrinsically a cell ID doesn't have its XNF's ID within it, right? I mean, normally
that's what I was afraid of.
Normally that's not the case. So because it's just basically it's just a number. So but that doesn't mean we couldn't, I guess, maybe introduce something like that. But that definitely has to be solved. Somehow you have to have some efficient way to map between.
You only need to map if you've lost information. So if you have the information, if SDNC already has the information, then I would ask to update this.
No, it doesn't. Because so when we looked at, when we had this discussion, the thing is, does ONAP care about a cell? I mean, at a management level, it doesn't. So therefore, like things like SDNC and SO, you can't count on any of those things to know about a cell because it doesn't manage that at all. It doesn't know about it at all. To ONAP at a higher sort of theoretical management level, the PNF itself as a logical entity is all it really cares about as a management entity. However, obviously, ONAP is like your laptop or computer, it's a platform. So you can introduce OFSAN PCI is a use of ONAP that cares about a cell. But ONAP intrinsically itself doesn't manage cells whatsoever. So therefore you can't count on something like SDNC or CCSDK or SO or SDNR to know.
But the question then is there sufficient information in the VES event that SDNC is consuming from DMAP to tie it back to an instance of a network function? Because it does care about...
You mean like when there's a cell update or something?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Continue.
Well, what I was going to say is, I mean, there are VES events that are defined... And a relevant one might be the major real relevant one is the new standard defined VES event with the namespace topic 3GPP configuration. and in there, I think you can store I mean, something has to give this, you know, here's a piece of, you know, like a PCI value change on a cell, and it's related to this PNF. Something has to do that. And I think there's nothing in the sort of the header itself of the standard find bus event. And let me put that in the chat for everybody so you can dig yourself.
Yeah, because I mean, it could be that you have to get the source. Mm-hmm. So from what IP address did this come from? And then you have to trust that there was no spoofing of that IP address. Otherwise, you've got a security issue. And then do a lookup to translate that IP address into a target instance. And then from the target instance, you can figure out what the target type was. And we need that types of information in order to do the job that we're trying to do. So my point is that the information existed somewhere along the line. Mm. Now, it's a question of making sure that it isn't discarded.
Right.
So that we can avoid doing a whole bunch of extra work because we discarded information earlier on because we didn't think we needed it.
Yeah. So I just put the
from VES point of view.
Yeah.
7.2. Okay.
Yeah, from VES point of view, I mean...
Camel, you're broken up again.
Camel,
we didn't hear any of that.
Sometimes you're okay, sometimes you're not. Yeah.
I'm working from one room. Yeah.
So from the VES point of view, start from the VES point of view.
Yeah, from a VES point of view, the only information I think you can see if are important to use that is source ID and the source name. There is the IP address, right? I mean the source ID. I mean which the PNF is sending the VES event, whether it's a PNF registration event or alarm event.
Okay, so it's a source IP address. Okay, so within the VES event, so hopefully. That actually matches something that's in the ANAI that we can then relay.
Well, yeah,
sorry to interrupt. If you look at section 1.2.44, that's the fields that you can use.
I went and clicked on something, so I have to go back to the top again.
Yeah, section 1.2.44.
1.2.44, standard defined.
So there is a source name, as Kemal says, and yeah. It's a source name, entity experiencing, blah, blah, blah. So I think maybe the source name will be, but anyway,
yes,
that's probably source the ID. Most relevant. That's certainly a relevant field so.
It actually says that the source name must be inventoried in ANAI.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, the source name is important because
in the description. Yep.
When you create a PNF service instance from SD from VID to SO, so you have to give in VID you have to give the same name. It's in VES event the source name, the same source name value, which is let's say G0B 20.
Okay, right? So this is perfect, Kamal. This is very very good because that means that this source. So when we do our sync. For instance data from ANAI, we need to pull this source name because the source name is the unique identity. Either the source name or the source ID is the unique
The name is the ID is just an ID like one.
It's a UUID.
That's a UUID. But the source name is very important because in the beginning, in ANAI, it stores the PNF ID and the PNF name. And then once the plug and play is completed, it will update, the PLH will update ANAI with other.
We lost you again, Kamal.
Vendor name.
Okay, but that's key because that is a piece of information that we need to store with the anchor. Because we're actually jumping a little bit ahead of where the implementation is, Tuan, but it's very important to note that is the identifier that will be coming up over the wire when we get notifications via VES, that's the piece of information.
We've
you mentioned earlier SDNC.
And also just a point, you probably want to make the solution a little bit more generic too. So I can show you again the slide that we had on this topic and it might help tie things together. but you know, you got to keep in mind also ONAP works with many domains, not just RAN. So and yeah. cell won't be your only logical object. So we want a framework that ties logical object records in CPS to XNFs. So just, you know, when you're thinking about this, don't make it so specific that it's just cells and cell IDs to, you know, to XNFs, which is kind of where I hear the, you know, so Kamal's talk about source ID is good because that sounds like a pretty generic thing, you know, so.
Yeah, but yeah.
This one. Coming from cells, because cells were just something that exists in the node, but the thing that we're talking about, I suppose, is some kind of, is an XNF.
Yes, it's how so to relate the cell to the XNF. And the API that's on the screen shared right now does not give us sufficient information to tie the cell to the XNF. And it sounds like within the VES, we have a source name which does exactly that. So the question then is, how do we ensure to get that source name into this API? So we will have to impact SDNC, even if they're using the exact same API. We have to modify this API to put in a second parameter, a second path parameter, to create a neighbor relation with the source name and then the cell ID.
Wait a second, we cannot use, okay, so that is for the, in some case, they are using the WISE encapsulate 3GPP standard defined payload. So you shouldn't, in some case, you cannot look at those payload. So those is not the standard defined payload. So for the payload, you have to look at 3GPP spec.
Okay, and I'm not so much worried about the, the payload, does that include the source?
It's different, yeah. So right now you're looking at those payload, it's not from the 3GPP.
So no, it's not. Ben sent on was VES 7.2.
I know 7.2, yeah, 7.2, which the chapter you're seeing the source name is for the fault, right?
For fault, okay, that's
for heartbeat. The fault, those are not those
not CM,
are those are not what is that like say a WISE event, so that not a standard defined WISE event that Sun is going to do in this release.
Okay,
so
this is good to know. This is because I mean, yeah. Ultimately, we need to get to the bottom of this and do it fairly quickly because.
Yeah.
With the CPS, everything is stored relative to the network function. It is the network function's data. So we need to be able to relate data, or whenever we're asked to store data, we need to be told which network function instance it relates to.
It should be in this page. Okay, so what for Sun case, what you can see in this WISE spec is only the command event header. And there's a payload pointing to the 3GPP payload, and that's it. For the others, you cannot use that spec. So, and then you have to look at the 3GPP standard.
Now, I mean, he was from my understanding, he was looking to VES event just to see how he can retrieve any information from the PNF relevant so that he can.
If this is for other use case like a non-CGPP, not some case, not the CGPP defined case, yes, then you can look at all the information in the spec regarding the fault, heartbeat, and those are a legacy WISE event that has nothing to do from the event sending from the other standard bodies. Yeah, that's fine. But since in the some case, I mean, the payload is completely from the other standard.
Yes.
So you cannot, what you can see is only the common event header, which has standard defined event type, and then it's pointing to payload, something. There is only three fields added in this WISE event related to the standard defined. And then the rest of them is you all have to look at the standard.
Yeah. So we'll have to look at that in order to figure out how to do this and exactly what the impact on SDNC will be. But I think that's really good. And thanks, Swami. You're off. But this has been a good conversation.
Tony, the only challenge I see, I mean, the only thing, yes, she's right. I mean, we have to look at the 3GPP standards because the information are coming from the gene would be, has the following the 3GPP NRM. The only challenge I see here, if you are dealing with like a 1PNF gene would be where you have what we call a non-split, means that DU, CUCP, CUUP combined. Mm-hmm. This is fine. What if you have a split, 2-split or 3-split, which means that where you have a DU, which is a PNF in one, installed in one edge location, and a CUCP or CUUP, which is XNF, VM, which is a VNF installed in other place, right? So this year, if you see the DU has what we have a module called NRCell DU. In that NRCell DU, you have some information related to the cell. And in the CU, you have the NRCell.
I get you. And to me, what you're defining is more of an issue for ANAI, because ANAI has to represent the network functions. And the network functions that ANAI reflects will be reflected in CPS. And each network function will have its own distinct set of Yang modules.
Yeah.
And they have to be relatable. So if we do have a disaggregated network function, then we still have network functions. So if we have something that historically would have been a managed element that is now split into multiple network functions that are deployed in different locations or different places or different virtual network functions, I don't mind. Each of them will individually have their own identifier because they have to be uniquely identifiable.
Yes. In ANAI, you will have the identifier for PNF, identifier for the VNF, whether
and
it's
we need, and the thing is that and this is where the conversation is kind of going to stop. We need to ensure that we do in fact have sufficient information coming up via the spontaneous event to relate that event to the network function instance that we emitted it. And we don't know how to do that. We say there is some information in the VES, and we'll have to look at the VES events to make sure that it's there. And then it looks like at the moment, it is the responsibility of SDNC, which is parsing the VES event, to update the XNF proxy with that information. But it will need to identify the target.
So there is a point, though, that Kemmel's making that I think is relevant, and that is...
He's making very relevant
points.
Hold on, wait.
So a thought is basically, there are things within XNFs that are pieces of XNFs that ONAP at a higher level doesn't care about, but like plugins do care about that CPS will need to track.
Yes.
So it's similar. In fact, a cell is an example of that, right? Where basically a cell is a thing within an XNF that the higher level of ONAP doesn't care about or doesn't know about, and thus ANAI won't know about. But a plugin within ONAP might care about, and thus CPS might care about. And that's why I was hinting at that we need to make a generic and a framework that it's just you have a logical tie to a logical type object within a CPS. So you can have records that are, that are essentially reflections of, actual XNFs, and records that are just pure logical objects. We need to sort of...
And that's where that's where a little bit this mapping service comes into play.
Yeah.
Because we need to build on top of something that is completely model driven, that requires no coding impact at all in order to support new XNFs.
Yeah, just a time check. We are at time.
We are.
Do you want to continue? This sounds like a lively discussion, and people are dropping already. Do we want to continue this next time, maybe? I don't think we're going to finish in this session.
No, and I guess we'll have to take it up next week.
Probably shouldn't rush it. So maybe we'll pick up from here. Krishna, can you make it next week to continue this?
Sure, Ben.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Fantastic topic.
We'll start
well,
with
well
this.
Done.
Yeah, we'll start with this discussion next week. I see, as I said, that people are dropping already.
Before you go there, just to let you know, maybe.
Oh, you're dropping out, Twine.
Yeah.
We lost you now, Twine.
Can you hear
You're back again.
Just to let you know,
I won't be my holidays start next Friday, and the two Fridays after that are bank holidays as well. So
yeah, I'm actually Friday, already but, on holiday. So we'll. I mean, if you want, we certainly should probably cancel on the 25th of December. But if you want, we can skip the 18th as well. It's up to people. Maybe we should.
Yeah, no, I think I don't mind. It can go ahead. I presume it will be recorded.
I think a lot of people will start to be going on vacation as well.
I think it would be good to try and progress this.
Yeah. Okay. So let's meet next week.
I don't think it's immediate, but we do need to understand where the impacts will be. So this is a really important conversation, both for network slicing and for SON, and potentially for the impacts on SDNC.
Well, the point is, if there'll be a core set of people to have a meaningful meeting, we can meet next week. That's kind of what I'm getting at. I'm not saying this isn't an important topic. I'm saying if there's only just two people talking about the topic, that's not so great, right?
I certainly will turn up.
Yeah, I'll turn. Schedule it. I'll be there.
Okay, all right.
This is a great topic.
Yeah, let's have the meeting.
I will be there as well, yeah.
Okay, great. All right, let's have the meeting. All right, so see everybody next week, and have a great weekend. Yep, take care.
Thanks.
Thank you, too.
Thanks, Pat.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Cheers.